Hi, and welcome to the Easton Bible Church podcast. We're so excited you've joined us today. Our hope is that God uses this message to help you experience a deeper, life-changing relationship with Jesus, because Jesus changes everything. Enjoy today's message.
So a couple of weeks ago, I was getting on a plane to fly back from Chicago back home, and as I started to take my seat, I looked across, and there was a little bit older gentleman sitting against the window, and he had a book that I'd never seen before. And I'm kind of a nosy person. I just kind of like to see what other people are reading. I'm always looking for a good book. And so I kind of like look over, like, what is he reading? And it's a book called Outlive. And immediately, I'm like interested. I'm like, outlive what? You know, I mean, I feel like from the title, it was supposed to be self-evident, but to me, it wasn't at all. I was like, outlive who? Outlive what? Like experiences, life, hell, like what are we outliving? And so I got on Amazon and I looked up the description of the book and it said this. This is a groundbreaking manifesto on living better and longer that challenges the conventional medical thinking on aging and reveals a new approach to preventing chronic disease and extending long-term health from a visionary physician and leading longevity expert. And as I was reading that, and I was thinking about all of our time in Ecclesiastes, I just wanted to kind of like lean around the woman sitting in between us. That would have been awkward, so I didn't. But I just kind of wanted to lean over towards that gentleman and go, can I give you a spoiler? It's not going to work. You know, I have bad news. I mean, it might work for a little while, it might seem like that, but eventually it's not going to work. You can't outrun old age. And I don't know what you think you're going to outlive, but listen, when your time is up, your time is up. Eventually old age catches up to you. Have you ever thought about what you'll be like when you're old? I know, let's just be honest. Some of you, you're there, okay? And that's okay, all right? I know we live in a society that worships youth. And honestly, like, it's so dysfunctional, right? Like, there are so many better ways of thinking about aging and thinking about how we should be respecting people who are older, who've lived life. And we sort of, like, lose that in our society. And so I just want you to know, if you're old, man, we respect you and we should respect you. And there's nothing to be ashamed of. Bask in the fact that you have lived a long time. You have seen, I hope, God's faithfulness in your life, and I hope that you're sharing that with other people. So enjoy the fact that you are old. Some of us, we are on our way there more all the time. Some of you there, though, you can't even imagine the idea of being old. Like, it's so far from your imagination that you might as well be immortal as far as you're concerned, right? In your mind, that is never going to happen to you. And so the trick for us this morning is understanding as we get to the end of Ecclesiastes that what Solomon wants us to wrestle with today is as true for those of us who are older as those who are young, right? It's relevant for everybody who is in this room, but at the same time recognizing that it's going to sound different to you depending on how old you are. But what Solomon wants all of us to wrestle with, as he has throughout this sort of existential journey that he's taken us on, is with the hard realities of life, right? Solomon never wants us to just sort of sit back and be able to relax. He doesn't want us to live in any kind of illusions or delusions about who we are, who God is, or what's going on in life. He wants us to face the whole cold, hard realities of life. And there are few realities of life that are harder to swallow than the fact that if you live long enough, you're going to get old. And death is coming. And so for some of us, sometimes death comes quickly, but if you are so fortunate as to live a really long time, death comes like a thief to kill and destroy, and it will eventually strip from you all of your life until there is nothing left. And sometimes it happens slowly and painfully. And see, we don't like to think about that. Right? I don't even like to say it. I'm looking at you and I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't even want to tell you about this, but this is the reality. And we don't like to think about it. In fact, we have whole industries in our society devoted to keeping us from ever having to face this reality, correct? I mean, we have whole industries, billion-dollar industries that we will funnel so much money into, so much time, so much energy into in order to deny the fact that we're going to get old or deny the fact that we're already older than we wish that we were. And we'll lie about our age. Right? We pretend we're not as old as we want everybody to think we are, right? We're so much younger than everybody thinks we are. And in fact, Carrie and I, it's funny, we actually had a running joke in our family, and trust me, it was truly a joke that Carrie hit 29 and that was it. But we like to do this with our kids. It was just fun, you know, because the kids were like they were young, and it was like, yeah, so dad gets older, but mom doesn't. And you could just see their brains like trying to work it out. I was like, wait, hold on. So dad, he just turned, 45, but mom, you're still 29. I'm like, math, weird, right? I can't even explain it. Like, we're just messing with them. But see, some people take this seriously. It's like, they don't want you to know how old they are because like that's something we want to, that's very private. We don't want anybody to think we're as old as we actually are. You ever see somebody who dresses like they're 15 even though they're 50? Right? You ever see that? It's not cool. Right? You might think that you're pulling that off. Can I just, out of love for you, can I just whisper to you very quietly? It's not. It's not working, all right? Like, stop. No one's falling for this. It's not cool. But see, what Solomon understands and what he wants us to wrestle with, he wants us to accept the reality that old age comes if you live long enough. And ultimately, it will end in death. And he doesn't do that to depress us, to discourage us. He does that because he knows it's the only way to wake us up to the reality that we need if we are to truly take joyful living seriously. We will waste it otherwise. And so in chapter 11, he says this, picking up where we left off. In verse 7, he says, "Light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years a man may live, let him enjoy them all. But let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything to come is meaningless." Now remember, with Solomon, when he talks about something being meaningless, this is our translation, he doesn't mean meaningless the way that we tend to think of it, like it has no meaning, right? He's not a first-year philosophy student reading Camus for the first time. He's like, everything is meaningless. None of it matters. That's not what he's saying. Right? Remember in the Hebrew, this is the word hevel. And in the Hebrew, whereas in English, we have like dozens of words to convey one idea. In the Hebrew, it's the opposite, that you have one word that conveys a dozen ideas. There's a whole range of meaning that is bottled up in this word, hevel. And so in our translations, it could read meaningless or vanity. But in this context, what Solomon wants us to understand is that the rest of your life, however much life you feel like you have, I've got so many years to live, he says, it's like a vapor. It's elusive. It's a mist. Right? It feels like you've got all this time in the world, but eventually it's going to be over before you know it. You'll look back and wonder, like, where did it all go? He says, however long you have, enjoy all your years because your life, your physical life, is trending in the wrong direction. Right? It's trending in the wrong direction, just like light giving way to darkness. The darkness of decay and death. And so it won't take as long as you think. Everything to come, this is what he's saying, everything to come is like a mist. You're going to grasp at it. It'll be gone before you know it. Here's what he's saying. Look, this light, it's like a, this is a picture of your life. Light is sweet. It pleases the eyes to see. Anybody solar powered in here? Right? Anybody solar powered? Like winter's coming and you're terrified. Right? The days are getting shorter. See, I know I've said some very harsh things about cats in the past. And I just want you to know, if you're a cat lover, I don't hate cats as much as I have alluded to in the past because my wife, I'm pretty sure, is part feline. Because when winter comes, we have a sunroom, and I'm going to find her when I come home and it's getting colder. She's going to be curled up in whatever patch of sunlight she can find. She is solar powered. She's like Superman. And this is what Solomon is saying, is that your life, bask in it. Soak in the light of your life. Soak in it, enjoy it, celebrate it as much and often as you can because eventually it's going to be extinguished. Just as daylight gives way to night. Verse 9, be happy, young man, while you are young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. But I know that for all these things, God will bring you to judgment. Have you ever felt like God was setting you up? He's like, enjoy your life, whack. Yeah, you ever have this kind of like sneaking suspicion that God's like, oh, you're enjoying your life a little bit too much, I'm gonna let the other foot fall? You kind of go in your life and it's like, man, things are going so great. What's coming next, right? Sometimes we have this idea that this is what God is doing. See, this sounds like the ultimate setup verse, doesn't it? And look at how he says at the beginning, be happy, young man, while you're young. Let your heart give you the joy. And let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. See, I read that and I'm like, Solomon, I am onto you. You are setting us up. This isn't true. Like, Solomon, like, what game are you playing? I'm not buying this. Follow your heart. Are you kidding me? Like, be happy? Listen, God does not want us to be happy. We all know that, right? God doesn't want us to be happy. He doesn't want us to follow our heart. That's the last thing we should ever do. You're just trying to set us up because look how it ends. But know that for all these things, God will bring you to judgment. Ha, I knew it. Right? See, this is Solomon. He's just telling you, oh yeah, go out there, enjoy your life, have a little fun, have a little pleasure, and then God's going to come by and whack. He's going to cut you down to size. See, Solomon, we get your game. We're not falling for that. You have to try harder. But maybe, that's not what Solomon is saying, because that's not who God is. And what if, just work with me here, what if maybe, just maybe, that God does want us to be happy? Maybe he does want us to follow our hearts, not in the hedonistic sense, but with a recognition that he is the creator of our hearts, who created our hearts to seek after, to pursue good and beauty and truth. It's just that sin got in the way. I think sometimes we almost have to reprogram the way that we hear this, don't we? I mean, depending on your experience growing up and how you've been taught about God and how you've been taught about even your own heart and who you are, and it's like, look, your heart is evil. Let's be a little more nuanced than that. Let's be a little bit more nuanced when we come to passages like this, because understand, God wants you to be happy, but he doesn't want you to chase happiness the wrong way. So C.S. Lewis, he explains this better than I ever could, so I'm just going to let him do it. There's a letter that he writes, and he talks about how pleasure it's almost like he compares it to like the gift that points back to the giver. It's the beam of light that points back to the sun. And so he says this, though. He's recognizing that there's a complexity to this. There's a nuance to this. And so listen to what he says. Aren't there bad, unlawful pleasures? Certainly there are. But in calling them bad pleasures, I take it we are using a kind of shorthand. We mean pleasures snatched by unlawful acts. Is the stealing of the apple that is bad, not the sweetness? The sweetness is still a beam from the glory. That doesn't palliate the stealing, it makes it worse. There is sacrilege in the theft. We have abused a holy thing. See, this can be hard for us to wrap our heads around, but your heart was created to take pleasure in the good things that God gives. See, you were created actually to follow your heart, but something happened to your heart along the way. God created your heart good. When God created your heart, it was good, it was perfect. It was created to follow after the good things that he gives of goodness and beauty and truth, but sin has infected your heart. You have a heart disease that will ultimately end in heart failure. But see, you must never get the two confused. Sin is not part of your heart any more than a tumor is part of your body, right? It exists, but it's a malignant evil force that has invaded where it should not be. And so don't get confused. If you have a brain tumor, like your brain is good, it's the tumor that's bad. As you hear Solomon say, look, follow your heart, don't follow the disease. You see the difference? And he says, look, if you don't follow, this is so crazy, if you don't follow the diseases and passions that God has given to you, then God's not going to be happy. Did you see the end of the verse? But know that for all these things, God will bring you to judgment. Are you happy? Did you follow your heart? If not, you're going to answer to God. You ever give someone a gift that you really, man, you really worked at? I mean, you searched, you thought about this person, this is the perfect gift for them, and you gave it to them, and they were like, nah. And they just kind of tossed it away. You know, maybe they gave you like kind of a cursory, like, oh, thanks, you know? And then it just like disappeared. How did that make you feel? My daughter, she loves to give gifts, and she loves to draw. And so I have received more drawings from her. It's unbelievable. The poor kid, she cannot math, okay? She's first grade math. We're already talking about getting her a tutor. It might as well be calculus. It's crazy. She's so right-brained. But she draws these pictures, and they're so elaborate. She spends so much time on these drawings. I come home, and almost every single day, it's like, Dad, look at this picture I made for you. She spent time on that. Like, what would it do to her heart if I got that? I was like, oh, thanks, babe. You know, thanks, honey. You know, crumpled up, throw in the trash. This is why I have stacks and shelves of the drawings that she has labored at, and she's given to me as gifts because they are an expression of her love to me. See, we gotta do something about this image that we have sometimes of God, that he's this taskmaster just trying to keep us on point, trying to enforce these rules. God is more like a parent. And he loves us, and out of this love that he has for us as expression, he gives us good gifts. But so often we can act like spoiled kids. When we get them, we're like, oh, thanks, God, and we toss it aside. Can I tell you that I think one of the reasons that people, maybe sometimes they look at us and they're not interested in this God that we talk so highly about, is because they assume that he is as joyless as we can be. Because we look at the gifts that we have and we just sort of take them for granted. We don't enjoy life the way that he has given it to us to enjoy. And I'll tell you, there are people that you're going to find in church, they seem to think that it's like the antithesis of God to enjoy anything. Like, they just want to suck the pleasure all out of life. They want to steal it from everybody else. It's like they've got these antenna, and they're looking for anybody who might be having too good of a time, and they want to put an end to that. It's no wonder that people outside look in, and they're like, are you guys, are you joyful? Because you're telling me God has given you this incredible gift, that God has saved you. Like, we're looking for joy. Are we joyful people? See, listen to me. This is going to blow your mind, all right? There's going to come a point, this is what he's saying, there's going to come a point where you may stand before God and you're going to have to give an account for how you used the gifts that he gave you. How did you enjoy them? Like, you're going to stand before God and he's going to say, I gave you this amazing life, this beautiful life, this gift of life. Like, how did you use it? And he's like, well, God, I was obedient. He's going to be like, that wasn't the point. Like, if I go home and my kids come to me and they're like, Dad, we mowed the lawn and we did the dishes and we vacuumed. We did all the things that you told us to do. We were obedient, but we hate you. Like, that's not going to resonate with me, right? Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, well, that's all that this relationship was about. It was just for you to obey me and to do the things that I wanted you to do. No, like, I'd be crushed by that. I'd be devastated. Like, the relationship is not built on obedience. It's not defined by obedience. It's defined by love. The obedience flows out of the love. And so God, he loves us. And he gives us these gifts, the gift of life. And by the way, even our obedience is not in servitude. It's a gift back to him. That's what a sacrifice is. It's a gift right back to God. We serve God out of obedience, but it's a gift that we offer back to him. This is the relationship that we have. It's absolutely built upon grace. That God loves us. And see, we get this confused. It's like, God, I'm just going to be obedient. That's all that you care about. No, it's not. He cares about your heart. If you think that you're going to establish or build a relationship with God by being a good enough person, you've missed the boat. It starts with knowing him and knowing how he's loved you. It flows out of love that then we do what he says. But he gives even that, his good gifts, even his commands are a good gift to us. And so if we stand before God, it's like, God, what did you do with this life that I've gave you? Well, God, I didn't cheat on my taxes. You know, I didn't steal from anybody. I didn't beat my wife. You know, I didn't hurt my kids. He's going to be like, yes, those were a given, by the way. All right, so glad that you did that. But what did you do with it? Like, I didn't create you just to not sin. Not sinning is a terrible goal for living. Living is the goal of living. So live it to the full. Live it for everything that you have. See, you were created. God has given you passions and desires in your heart. He's given those to you, so follow them. Chase after them. And don't let anything get in your way. This is what he says in verse 10. So then, banish anxiety from your heart. See, what gets in the way of us enjoying life and following after him? It's anxiety. It's stress. It's emotional paralyzation. Right? Banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigor are meaningless. Again, he's not saying that your youth doesn't matter. He's saying that it's fleeting. I actually love the translation here, because in their literal translation would be youth and dark hair. It's fleeting. Believe me, I get this, man. You know, it's gone before you know it. But see, some of you got dark hair, and you might not lose your hair, but it's going to turn white over time. That's what he's saying. You feel youthful and vigorous, vitality, but it's going to go away. And so in the meantime, enjoy it while you can. And the way that you do that is by banishing anxiety from your heart and casting off the troubles of your body. Two of my kids just started jiu-jitsu this week. I'm super proud of them. I love jujitsu, and you know, they've been fighting anyway, and so we just figured we'd create something constructive, you know, like a constructive way for them to do it and to do it more efficiently, because that's a good thing. But no, I'm excited for them. And so it's Eli, who's 8, and Jude, who's 11. And Eli, I got to tell you that I was a little nervous, because if you've ever seen Eli, I'm glad he's not in here. If you've ever seen Eli, he is bird-like. He looks like he would snap in two. You know, he just has these like little spindly arms and legs held together by sinew and skin. And so we're like, well, we're just sending you out here to your death. You know, just go out there. But my other son, Jude, he's not built like that. He's not like huge, but he's stocky. He's like a Hummer, not like a bird. And so I'm not worried about Jude. He's strong. He's thick. And so we take him to the very first class, and they put him out on the mat. And because they are the two new kids, they actually pair them together. So Jude is literally twice Eli's size, easily twice. I'm like, well, this should be fun. And so the very first thing that you're teaching them is how, if you're pinned to the ground, how to escape. And so Eli lies down on his back, and Jude crawls on top of him into what they call a mountain position, and he's holding Eli down. And then the instructor was great. He explained step by step, here's how you, you know, practice the skill. How's how you execute the skill. And so Eli, this tiny little dude, right? He like pulls Jude forward. He grabs his shoulder. He blocks the ankle and, boom, flips him right over. I was like, that's incredible. Like, that was awesome. Now, to be fair, Jude is a lot stronger and bigger, and he was not fighting back, all right? But still, I mean, just little bitty Jude just threw this much bigger dude off him. There's no way without that technique he was ever going to do it. And see, this is the imagery that I want you to have when he talks about banishing anxiety, because this is an aggressive verb that he's using here. It's like, remove it, throw it off of you. It is pinning you down, and it's time to throw it off. See, there's some of you, maybe you feel this. You feel like this stress and anxiety is like a blanket just holding you down all the time. It's like this bully that's lying on top of you. And Solomon is saying, it is time for you to throw it off. Cast it off of you. And you might be thinking, but it's too big. It's too much. I don't know how to do that. Can I tell you that it doesn't mean that you have to do it alone? That's why this community exists, so that we can help one another. There's so many different ways that this looks. Can I give you just one? We've talked about Regen a lot. Regen is a spiritual jujitsu class. Like, when you go to Regen, you walk into this room, and you're going to be called out to the mat, and you're going to have other people there cheering you on, and you're going to learn some of these techniques of how to allow Jesus to do this work in your life so that you can cast off the sin that is holding you down. See, it is that type of a moment that we are looking for in life, where we don't simply lie there in defeat, but we need other voices sometimes. We need other people, and we need the power of God's Spirit that allows us to grab a shoulder, block an ankle, and flip it right off of us. And that's what he's calling us to. Throw it off and cast off the troubles of your body. He's not talking about some sort of like a magical faith healing. He's not like, oh, you've got pain in your knee, just cast it off. Oh, I don't believe in this pain anymore. Listen, if we know nothing else about Ecclesiastes, we know that he is honest. He's not pretending anything isn't what it is. As you get older, life hurts. Like, your body literally hurts. Yeah, your back hurts, your knees hurt, my elbow hurts. Right? All kinds of things start to hurt us along the way. But there's a way of dealing with your pain so that it doesn't steal your joy. That's what he's talking about. I got to tell you, in the first service, there's a man here. He's a hero of mine. His name's Rich Palladino. A lot of you know him. And Rich has multiple myeloma, and he just recently endured a very, very, very painful surgery on his foot to ease the pain that he'd been experiencing, but it's been an incredibly difficult recovery for him. But can I tell you that Rich is a spiritual jujitsu master? Okay, if you know Rich, you know this is true. Because every time I visit him, every time I talk to him, this guy, man, he chooses joy. I mean, if there was anybody who had an excuse just to like lie under anxiety, stress, and depression, and happiness, be like, take me. Like, it's Rich. But he refuses, and he throws it off, and he refuses to allow it to steal his joy. Like, I don't know what you've got in your life and what kind of pain you're dealing with, but there is a way of dealing with it where it does not steal your joy. And the way that you do that, let's get real practical, it's in the very next verse, is to remember. This is the very basis, this is the heart of Regen, by the way, is to remember your Creator. is to remember the God who made you. Look at what he says, verse 1 of chapter 12. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come. Do you hear this? He doesn't say, wait until it's too late. He doesn't say, wait until everything gets hard. He doesn't say, wait until the pain comes. Sometimes we do that. It's not too late, but here's his advice. Start now. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. This is habitual. Like, do this every day. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Because by the time that happens, it might be too late. It might be that your soul is so devastated by all that you've endured that you can't remember God at all. And what he's saying here is that there is a reality of God that should shape all of our realities, should reshape everything that we understand about life. And it starts with this reality that he is the Creator and we're not. That where we need to begin so often when it comes to the stress that we feel in life, the worry that we have, the depression that we feel, all of those, oftentimes they are coming from this belief that life has to do it our way, that we can control life, that life has to obey us, has to do the things that we want, work the way that we want, and then we are faced with this reality that life doesn't play by our rules, and we're devastated. But when we remember that God is our Creator, what that reminds us of is that we're not, and we need to get over ourselves. We need to take ourselves a little bit less seriously, but in that, there's a peace and the joy that comes when we remember that God is God. He is in control. But you got to start now. And what Solomon wants us to understand is that it's now, before it's too late, that we need to come to grips with this reality that we're not in control, that we are going to get old. If we live long enough, you're going to get old. It's going to strip your life away from you, the reality of our human limitations, because if we don't embrace this reality while remembering God, then we will wind up broken, bitter shells of human beings. See, I think this is why he gives us this haunting picture of old age that comes next. It's the picture of a life disintegrating until there's nothing left. Look at this verse 2. And I'm going to go fairly quickly, just try to keep up. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain. This is foreboding imagery. This is what is coming. This is the storm that's coming and you can't stop it. Verse 3, when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, when the grinders cease because they are few and those looking through the windows grow dim. The keepers of the house, this could be your hands, right? They're trembling, they're shaking as you get older, and you're stooping because of your age, and your grinders, your teeth, they cease to grind because you've lost your teeth. Can't eat solid foods anymore. You're looking through the windows, but your eyes are too dim. You've lost your sight. It's fading. Verse 4, when the doors to the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, when men rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint, right? You're just not going outside anymore. Right, you stay home more and more. You barely get out of bed. You hard to get up, hard to go out. Right, you're eating less and less. You lose your appetite. You lose your sense of hearing. Verse 5, when men are afraid of heights and of dangers in the streets, when this almond tree blossoms, your hair goes white, whatever hair you've got left. And the grasshopper drags himself along and desire is no longer stirred. Like, you get to this point where it's like, man, don't get up on that ladder. Right? You don't have the balance that you used to have. You don't want to get too high, and you're just sort of dragging yourself along, stooped over. Can you make it a little bit further? And there's a loss of desire, and then ultimately it ends in death. Then man goes to his eternal home, and mourners go about the streets. Verse 6, remember him. Remember who? God. Remember your Creator before it gets to this point. Remember him before the silver cord is severed, or the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring, or the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. We think this is funeral imagery, perhaps, but it's a picture of everything in life finally breaking down. Your life itself is spilled out on the ground. This is the awful pronouncement of death undoing all of God's creation of you. And so Solomon concludes, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. It's fleeting. It's over before you know it. Life as beautiful as it can be, will be over like a vapor or mist in the wind. It'll just vanish. And even if you live to a ripe old age, that process will strip everything from you. And the question that we're left with is, when that has happened, if you live long enough and aging has stripped from you everything that you held on to, that you held dear, that you tried to rely upon, all the trophies that were in your trophy case, all of it's gone, you've got nothing left except what's left of you, who will you be then? See, it's so interesting that the aging process in some ways, I think it reveals our truest selves. That over time, all the things that we like to hide behind, the mask that we try to create for ourselves, all the things we like to point to and say, well, this is who I am, and the song and the dance that we can show off to everyone. But see, old age, over time, it strips all of that, and it's like we're left with the purest expression of our souls. And there are some people that you will meet at that time in their life, and man, they are so full of joy and love and compassion, but that's not true of everyone. One of the more profound experiences of my life, this sounds so mundane, but before we moved here in Dallas, I had a favorite Starbucks just around the corner, and on Fridays I would go there because it was a study day, and so I go in early, and I knew the barista, I knew the manager, and walk in, and here's my coffee, and sit down, and I'm going to just enjoy some time in God's Word and some books, but I'm always watching people. It's just kind of my thing. I'm watching all of you, by the way, just so you know, no pressure. And so I'm always watching people, and there was this group of men that started meeting there. After a few months, they started coming in, and they started meeting there every single Friday, and these guys were old dudes, okay? Old guys. I guess they didn't have anywhere else to be. And so they would hang out for an hour, 2 hours. I don't even know sometimes how long they stayed. And I could overhear some of their conversation. And they were so bitter. There was so much complaining, whining. Woe is us. All of life's disappointments, all the things they see in the world that they didn't like, everything from politics, to their neighbors, to their families, everything was just bad all the time. And I listened to them, and it's like this thought just burrowed itself into my soul. I do not want to end up like them. I don't want to. I don't know where you are on this trajectory, but like, I don't want to end up like that. And so I'm choosing joy. This was my thought. I'm going to choose joy. This is my decision. Whatever happens in my life, I'm going to choose to be happy. I'm going to choose to be joy for however much time I have because I don't want to end up like that. And see, it doesn't just happen in an instant, does it? Like, you don't spend your whole life cultivating joy and compassion and generosity in your life and then wake up this grouchy, angry old person. Like, that doesn't work that way. It comes upon you slowly, gradually over time as you have a million different decisions that you make in a million different moments where you choose to be calloused instead of tender, where you choose to be bitter instead of gracious, where you choose to be angry. And over time, you build a prison for your soul. And it's small, it's constrained, and it's suffocating, and it's hopeless. And just this week, I found this beautiful essay by a Presbyterian minister from the 1800s. His name is James Russell Miller, and I'm just going to read you a small section of it. I encourage you to go find it, ask me, and I'll tell you where you can find it. So beautiful as he reflects on these very verses. Listen to what he says. Old age is the harvest of all the years that have gone before. It is the barn into which all the sheaves are gathered. It is the sea into which all the rills and rivers of life flow from their springs and the hills and valleys of youth. We are each, in all our earlier years, building the house in which we shall have to live when we grow old. And we make it a prison or a palace. And the important practical question is this: how can we live, so live that our old age, when it comes, shall be beautiful and happy? So you may not realize it, but right now, like the decisions that you make, you are building your future. You're building your future self. In the decisions that you make, either to enjoy life or to take it for granted, to toss it aside. The decisions that you make, either to remember your Creator or put it off for another day. Right? You're building your future self, but see, it all comes down to your choices. And maybe you're here this morning and man, you wish You know, why not? I wish I was a more generous person. Maybe you wish you were more generous. Can I tell you, until you choose to act more generously, you will just stay greedy. Like, it's not going to change. You can't just wish it into reality. If you want to be a more courageous person, then you need to make the decision to commit acts of courage, because otherwise you will stay a coward. And if you want to be a gentler, kinder person, then you need to commit blatant acts of kindness and gentleness. Otherwise, it is just wishful thinking. And if you want to grow old and one day your soul be exposed, full of joy and hope and truth, then you got to start today and build that future, because it's not going to happen by accident. See, I don't know about you, but I don't want to get to the end of my life, and however many days or decades I have no idea, right? Neither do you. I have no idea. But I don't want to get there and discover that all that's left of me is bitterness and anger, crushed by 1,000 different disappointments and disappointments and everything else that goes wrong in life, right? Different offenses that I've had to like soak into my life, and I've just let those define me. Like, that's not what I want. I want to pursue the heart that God has given me as long as I have blood pumping in my veins. I want to remember him, and I want to enjoy life as long as I have air in my lungs, so that when I get to that point in my life, I am more loving. I am more generous. I am more compassionate. I am more gracious than I have ever been in my life. How about you? See, don't settle for the life that you have right now. Decide today, determine today to become more fully who God has created you to be. See, this is why Jesus came. To free you from sin. See, Jesus comes and he frees us from this sin that has separated, severed our connection with God. And God is the source of life. And that's just the beginning, though. Because as he frees us from sin, he's freeing us from everything that would prevent us from being who God created us to be in the first place. See, sometimes we think, well, God doesn't want us to be us. It's actually not true. It's the opposite. God wants you to be you without the sin. And what happens is sin, it actually, that's an expression often of as we've forgotten our true selves. Sin is a distortion of who you actually are. And so what Jesus wants is he wants to come into your life and to do this work in your life where less and less sin defines you and more of his spirit empowers you. And it changes you from the inside out so that you become more and more of who he's created you to be, so that he can show you off to the world so that people see him. And they're like, wow, look at this God that they serve. See, if you don't know Jesus like that, in just a moment, I'm going to pray for you, but I just want you to hear me really clearly. If you have never given your life to Jesus, then you're still on the wrong side of this line. When you give your life to Jesus, you step into a new life with him, and he comes in and he gives you a new life. And in that moment, everything changes, but that's just the beginning. Because then over time, it's the outworking of that new reality in your life as he frees you from sin, as he shows you your true self. See, if you've never given your life to Jesus, you may feel right now that you are just, you're pinned to the mat. And sin has way with you and you're lying there and there is nothing else you can do. I want you to know that Jesus came to free you from that. You can find forgiveness. You can find freedom in him. And he's listening right now. He's waiting for you right now. Let me pray for us. Lord, if there's anyone here right now who they just know that they've never stepped into that new life that you have for them. They've never received forgiveness for their sins that separate them from the life that you have. They've never received the forgiveness of sins. So that sin is still crippling their soul. But I pray that they would be listening right now, and I pray that you would just impress upon them that this is their moment. Not tomorrow, not later, but this can be the moment where they choose to give their life to you, and that you are faithful, that you love them, you created them, and that you will come into their life and you will change them and make them new. And if that's you right now, I just want you to hear me. You can pray right now, very simply, Jesus, I give you my life. I've tried to do it on my own. Jesus, I'm done with that. I give you my life. And you can surrender your life to him. And he will come into your life. You were his idea. He loves you more than you can possibly imagine. You can pray that to him. Jesus, I give you my life. And if you do, come and talk to us. We want to walk alongside you. It's just the beginning. But Lord, even as we've, for so many of us, we forget you along the way. We gave our lives to you. You came in. You've saved us. And then we got distracted and we forgot about you. Lord, remind us of you. That we would remember you every day, starting today, for as long as we have. And that remembrance would fuel our desire, not out of obedience and sort of this servitude way, Lord, but in obedience out of recognizing your love for us and our love for you. That you love us more than we can possibly imagine. And so, Lord, help us to follow you. Lord, give us your spirit to empower us to choose. To choose the life that you've given to us. To choose joy. To choose compassion. To choose love. To choose courage. Lord, help us to follow you this week. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Easton Bible Church podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's message and that God will use it to speak powerfully into your life. If you have questions about how you can have a relationship with Jesus or would like more information about our church, you can connect with us on Instagram and Facebook or go to the Easton Bible Church website at ebc.org.